But it would be like the little boy that comes up to his mommy and says, "Can I have a cookie?" And mommy says, "No, you can't have a cookie till after dinner. You have to eat your dinner first." "But I want a cookie now." Mm-hmm. "No, you can't have a cookie now. I want it now." And then he stomps his feet and he has a little tirade, a miniature tirade. And mommy says, "All right, if you don't stop that, you're not going to get a cookie after dinner either." And then he screams and throws himself on the floor. Well, sometimes we're like that with God. We think that's going to work. But it's moments like that that if we just sit silently before our icons and light the lampada and just say, "Here I am, God." Metropolitan Callistos Ware, whom I've known for many, many years, I met him when I was in graduate school in Berkeley, studying to be a psychiatrist or psychologist. And I didn't know Orthodoxy at all, but he spoke one night at the faculty lounge, and I was curious, so I went to listen to him. And so I've dined with him many times. I've known him over the years. Whenever he's in this area, especially Seattle, I've always gotten together with him. And he tells a wonderful story that he knew of as a boy, a story that he heard as a boy. There are three old men in a village in Scotland. And every day, these four guys, they get together and they go to the local pub and they have a pint together. And every day they do that. But one of them does something different. Every day he goes into the little village church. And he's in the church for 3 hours. And when he comes out of the church, he goes to the pub and joins his three friends. And one day, one of his friends said, "What are you praying about? Every day you're in that church for 3 hours. What are you praying for?" And he said, "What are you asking for? What are you asking God for?" And he says, "I'm not asking God for anything. I'm just sitting there looking at God. And God is sitting there looking at me." And then the Metropolitan said, "I thought then that that was one of the best definitions of prayer, and I still think so." Prayer is not meant to be a constant barrage of telling God what we need or even what somebody else needs. One of the best things you can do for someone that you know is to pray the Jesus prayer. "Lord Jesus Christ, help, save, and have mercy upon Mary. Lord Jesus Christ, help, save, and have mercy upon Mary." Or maybe you think you've got the worst priest in the world. "Lord Jesus Christ, help, save, and have mercy upon Father." "Lord Jesus Christ, help, save, and have mercy upon." You can do that with your bishops. And it's a prayer for them that is very efficacious. But at the same time, you're not telling God what they need, because God doesn't need you to tell him what they need. He doesn't even need you to tell him what you need, because God knows. And ultimately what we want is we want what is salvific for our soul or for their soul. And so if we approach prayer with that in mind, then we're going to be far more at peace with our prayer life. I got a telephone call yesterday from a young man in Serbia. I've been sort of his long-distance spiritual father for 7 years now. And he is someone that originally contacted me.
I'm sorry, I have to have you time out for 1 second. There's a lady here that's staying next door that needs a ride to the airport at Santa Rosa. Who is it? Is that you?
Yeah.
I need to talk to you. I'm sorry.
That's right. What was I?
About the guy from Serbia.
Oh, yeah. So this young man from Serbia, I first heard about him when I started posting my blog articles on Facebook. And I got a barrage of semi-hate notes. What is a monk doing on Facebook? And so I wrote an article about what is a monk doing on Facebook. And I quoted Patriarch Kirill of Moscow, who said, if the church doesn't use the internet, only the devil will use the internet. And so that's why I use it. I use my podcasts and my blogs and my blog articles I put on Facebook because I'm not going to let, because I know what evilness works on the internet. And I even see it. I was in a coffee house yesterday in Berkeley, and I looked up and I looked around the room. Everybody in there was on either their iPhone or their laptop or their iPad. Everybody. Yeah. And there were people sitting together doing that. You know, and I wanted to, I would love to have the ability to somehow tap into all and say, get off that phone, get off that internet, or else. And they'd all be looking around. Because that, what it does for young people is it is taking away their ability to communicate, and even worse, it's taking away their ability to think. So people cannot, young people today, our psychologists have shown this to be true, are having more difficulty than ever even doing logic and reason, because it's all done for them. You know, who's the most handsome man in the world? Who is the most handsome man in the world? Well,
my soul is the same.
But you know what I mean. When, when this is what people do to find the answers to things.
Somebody got an answer.
Do you love me?
I'm not allowed to.
Obviously, you're not an Orthodox Christian. Who, me? But what I'm saying is that even while driving, if I want to ask a question, I could just do that and it will give me the answer sometimes. But that is not healthy. It's not healthy for the mind, and it's not healthy for the soul. And so I went online with the idea that I wanted to help people. And one of the things that I said in defense of being on Facebook is that since Facebook is this sort of universal go-to place for young people, and I said in my article that young people are afraid of telling struggles that they're having. They don't tell their parents. They don't tell their best friends. They don't tell their priest. Who do they tell?
Facebook.
They go online. And they tell people about things that they would never tell anybody else, but they don't know who is on the other side. It could be a lurker. It could be, you know, it could be anybody. You know, how many times do we find men getting arrested who are portraying themselves as 14-year-old boys or girls? That happens. So it's a dangerous place for that. So what I said in this article is that I am an old monk who wants to be available for young people to talk to who don't have any place else to talk to. And I didn't know about instant chat thing. I didn't know that you could turn it off. And so the first thing that happened is I had a young man, a Scotsman, or no, an Irishman, from Ireland, who met the woman of his dreams at the university. She was a young woman from what's that desert city in the
Arizona?
No, in Middle East. The big one.
Dubai.
Dubai. He met a young woman from Dubai who converted to Orthodoxy while in the university in England. And they met. They're both Orthodox. They fell in love. They decided they were going to get married. So she went back to Dubai to tell her family about what she was going to do. When she got back, her father took her passport and told her that if that boyfriend of yours dares come here, I will have him killed. And so here I am, text messaging him and her from Dubai and he from Ireland. Back and forth. They're depressed. They don't know what to do. She wants to kill herself. He's in despair. And then, he was an interesting fellow. He was covered with tattoos, and he was a heavy metal singer, but also Orthodox. So, and then, at the same time that was happening, there was a young man who was a Serb living in Greece, in Athens, and was lonely, and had fallen in love with his best friend's girlfriend.
Oh, that's always good.
And he was just like, you know, didn't know what to do. He was unhappy. He was suicidal. And these were just three. I had probably a dozen people like that from all around the world texting me. And I'm texting back, and I'm trying to not get these things mixed up. You know? And so I'm sleepless. And it got up to 48 hours. I could dare stop because what's going to happen? And so I was having my monks bring me food in my cabin. I was having lots of coffee. I was about losing it and thinking, what if I make a mistake and I say the wrong thing to the wrong person? And finally, this priest came to visit, Father Photius, who's very high-tech type, Greek. And he comes over and Father Paul sends him to my cabin, and I told Father Photius, I said, I don't know what to do. I don't dare walk away. And he says, post your email address and turn off the texting. I said, you can do that? And he says, yes. So that's what I did. But I told everyone that has been communicating with me, text, email me your questions. We'll have dialogue through email when I'm able. And this one young man who was in Greece, the Serb, who was very suicidal, and I had this strong relationship after that. I just got a call yesterday from him. And now he's back in Serbia, and he's very serious about his faith, but he's the only member of his family that is Orthodox. And he has no friends who are Orthodox. And then he has priests who often sounds like, either overworked or they don't care. So he doesn't really have anybody that he can talk to about the struggles that he's going through, except me. And the nice thing with him is that we FaceTime. So I can actually see him and he sees me. So there's a face and a person there. And I do that. But I share this with you in the sense that everybody is suffering in some way or another in this society of ours. And probably more so than ever. But in a different way. And it's in a way that the church has never encountered, so most priests don't know how to deal with it. So they don't deal with it. And I do not believe that as the church that is enough for us to just operate. I told my archbishop once, I said the trouble with a lot of priests is that they're really not much different than a sorcerer. They do the magic. They do the right language, the right length of services, and and all the right ceremonies and use the right incense and they wear the right costume. But that's it. They don't know how to catechize, they don't know how to counsel, they don't know how to preach. And he agreed with me. And part of the problem that we have is that a lot of our seminaries don't do pastoral counseling as a course. And they don't arm the young future priests with the tools that will make a difference in people's lives. And so at some point when somebody's struggling and they're not getting the help from their priest, they just say, well, what is all this? It's a bunch of hocus pocus, and they walk away.